Good morning. It is 9:02 a.m. We are here today, September 18, 2017. Oh, sorry, October 24, 2017, in the OPA hearing rooms 3907 of the DNA building in Hagania, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPAPA 17-008 Shanghai Electric Power Japan Co. Ltd. and Terra Energy Inc. versus the Guam Power Authority. Presiding over the hearing today, our hearing officer, Peter C. Perez, and public auditor, Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Rodlin Gerardo and Jared Hernandez. Will appellant SEPJ and Terra Energy please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, this is Bill Mann, counsel to a consortium composed of Shanghai Electric Power Japan Limited and Terra Energy Inc., the appellants in this matter.
Thank you.
And Daniel Berman, on behalf of the same clients and their representatives seated behind me today, Mr. Wu for Terra Energy Inc., and Mr.
Dao Shea, who is the general manager of Shanghai.
Could Mr. Wu just raise his hand? Which one's Mr. Wu?
Mr. Wu.
And then Mr.
And this is Mr. Dao from Shanghai Electric Japan.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GPA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Graham Botha, general counsel. To my left is Ms. Beatrice Lundiaco, assistant general manager for administration.
Thank you. Will interested party Hanwha Energy Corporation and Pacific Petroleum Trading Corporation please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Vince Camacho, attorney for Hanwha Energy, as well as Pacific Petroleum Trading Corporation. I have with me today Mr. Dae-Jin Jun from Hanwha, and I also have Andrew Park from Pacific Petroleum.
Thank you. Will interested party Korea Electric Power Corporation and LG CNS Co. Ltd. Consortium, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record.
Good morning. Anita Ariola for the consortium. With me today are my clients, Mr. Chom Kok Choi and Mr. Somor Leo.
Thank you. We may proceed.
May I ask who are the rest of the people in the back? Are they observers or representatives or clients from respective parties?
Mr. Dao Shea, the president of Shanghai Electric Power Japan, is an observer. He, of course, is a party also. Mr. Eddie Wu, the president of Terra Energy Inc., is a party and a witness.
And the man in the white shirt is Dale Gauthier, our first witness for the morning.
I have several members of the consortium's team who have been working on the project here in Guam. They will not be called as witnesses, and they are here, as well as our interpreter from Korea.
Okay. And the people who just walked in, are you witnesses, observers?
Observers.
Okay. Sorry, I don't think we have any more. There's one chair over there. During the break to get another chair. The room is small.
Do the parties wish to make opening statements, or shall we go right into the evidence?
I would like to make a brief opening statement, if I could.
Thank you, Mr. Mann.
If I may, Hearing Officer, I just have one housekeeping item.
Yes.
I already have passed out two additional exhibits that I intend to introduce during the hearing. If I may introduce that onto the record, it's prepared to be attached to our exhibit binder.
That's fine.
As well.
Sorry, it's hard to get out of here. How many copies did you just want?
Well, for everybody. We'll do that probably during the break.
I handed it out already.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other matters before we proceed to opening statements? Okay, Mr. Mann.
Thank you. We represent a consortium composed of Shanghai Electric Power Japan Limited, and Mr. Dao Shea has come from Japan to attend this hearing. He will not be a witness. We also the other partner in the consortium is Terra Energy Inc., a Guam corporation. Mr. Eddie Wu is president of Terra Energy and will be a witness today. Now, we'll refer to this consortium as Shanghai Electric, or SEPJ, as we referred to it in the briefs. There were multiple problems with this procurement, which Shanghai Electric believes should result either in the bids of Hanwha being rejected and replaced with the two Shanghai Electric bids, or alternatively, the procurement should be rebid with a corrected and revised IFB. One problem is the simple fact that this procurement was doubled in size after bid opening. The evidence will show clearly that GPA sought to procure 60 megawatts, sometimes referred to as MW, of alternative energy, with a maximum size of 30 megawatts per project. The bidders all submitted two 30-megawatt solar facilities, totaling 60 megawatts per bidder. However, after bid opening, GPA doubled the size of the procurement from 60 megawatts to 120 megawatts. It did so by awarding to Hanwha both its 30-megawatt projects that it had bid, and in addition, awarding to KEPCO both of the 30-megawatt projects that KEPCO had bid, totaling 120 megawatts. Shanghai Electric has briefed this issue extensively, including legal citation in its appeal, and also in its comments on the agency report, and also in its hearing brief. Now, since this is an opening statement, I will not go into legal argument at this time, but on the factual level, Shanghai Electric will present evidence that had it been aware that 120 megawatts of electricity was being procured, it would have bid four 30-megawatt solar facilities. Shanghai Electric's evidence will further show that it would have realized economies of scale with 4-megawatt facilities. With larger quantities involved, Shanghai Electric could have negotiated more favorable pricing for material and service providers, and the proration and maintenance cost would have resulted in a lower cost per unit of energy generated. Now, Shanghai Electric recognizes that these economies of scale would have been realized by all bidders. That means that if GPA had announced in advance in its IFB that it intended to procure 120 megawatts of alternate energy, it would have obtained a lower price per unit of energy procured. Next, GPA took a very ambiguous and misleading position regarding whether the transmission lines, which connect the power generated by the solar facilities to GPA's electric grid, should be above ground or underground. The evidence will show that GPA highly recommended underground transmission lines for the obvious reason that underground transmission lines are more reliable given Guam's exposure to typhoons. However, the evidence will also show that underground transmission lines are far more expensive than overhead transmission lines. The evidence will show that based on GPA's strong recommendation, Shanghai Electric did provide for underground transmission lines in its bid submission, while Hanwha and KEPCO utilized overhead lines. The problem is that while GPA strongly recommended underground transmission lines, it did not specifically require them and did not provide any credit for bidders that provided underground as opposed to overhead lines. It is the position of Shanghai Electric that this prevented the bids from being evaluated on an apple-to-apple basis. And the only way to obtain a fair comparison of bids is a new solicitation in which GPA either specifically requires underground transmission lines, or at least provides a credit to those bidders who responsibly provide for underground transmission lines. The next problem with this procurement regards the microgrid. The evidence will show that GPA requested bidders to provide price information regarding a microgrid only for GPA's information in the event that GPA in the future decided to establish microgrids. The evidence will show that a microgrid was not part of this procurement at all. As requested by GPA, Shanghai Electric, Hanwha, and KEPCO all submitted microgrid price information. The evidence will show that GPA decided, although it only requested an informational bid for future use, GPA and Hanwha reached an agreement that Hanwha's microgrid pricing information would become part of the award to Hanwha. That's $54 million over a 25-year period, based on an item which was not part of the procurement in the first place. To make matters worse, comparison of the informational prices provided by Shanghai Electric, KEPCO, and Hanwha will show that Hanwha's price was over twice as high as that of either Shanghai Electric and KEPCO, or KEPCO. Shanghai Electric believes the evidence will show that GPA and Hanwha improperly agreed to award the two microgrids to Hanwha. In fact, most of the cost of the microgrids was already included in the base bid. And the award of $54 million to Hanwha was improper. It is the position of Shanghai Electric that the agreement between GPA and Hanwha to include an award for microgrids in any amount of money rendered Hanwha's bid submission non-responsive to the IFB and that Hanwha's bid should be rejected in the entirety. It is Shanghai Electric's position that its two projects were first and second runner-up and that its bid should be awarded in place of Hanwha's bid. Now, if the public auditor does not agree with that conclusion, then in no event can microgrids be awarded to Hanwha as part of this procurement. If GPA wishes to make microgrids part of this procurement, it may only do so with a new solicitation where it describes what it wants. It requested only informational pricing. No specifications were stated, and no one is able to tell what GPA would receive for the microgrid price. It's simply not part of this procurement, but was converted improperly by Hanwha and GPA to not only become part of the procurement, but resulted in an award to Hanwha. Finally, GPA argues that Shanghai Electric's two bids are higher than GPA's actual current avoided cost. Now, GPA claims is prohibited. The bids must be below, it claims, its actual current avoided cost. The problem is GPA equates its actual current avoided cost with its LEAC rate. LEAC stands for Levelized Energy Adjustment Cost and is calculated by GPA every 6 months depending upon the price of fuel oil and various fuel handling costs. However, the evidence will show that in direct response to a bidder question, GPA specifically stated that bids did not need to be below its LEAC rate. Shanghai Electric believes GPA's answer to that bidder question was correct. It's only now that GPA is raising the LEAC rate as a cap. The evidence, in fact, will show that there is a is both a short-run avoided cost and long-run avoided cost, and that this 25-year procurement involves long-run avoided cost. Evidence will show that when it comes to alternative energy, previous GPA procurements for alternative energy have been at a rate higher than the Shanghai Electric bids in this procurement, and in fact higher than the then current LEAP rate. Shanghai Electric believes this evidence means that GPA is incorrect in now claiming that its avoided cost is equal to its LEAP rate. However, should the public auditor disagree, then GPA's statement in response to a bidder question that bids did not have to be lower than its LEAP rate was extremely misleading and would constitute yet an additional ground for a rebid in a new solicitation in which GPA clearly states whether bids must or need not be below its LEAP rate. I thank the public auditor and the hearing officer for their attention.
Thank you. Mr. Botha?
Before we do that, we might have a couple of more chairs, but that's about it, okay, for the public. Our maximum capacity with these two. Thank you. Mr. Botha, you may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Hearing Officer, Mr. Brooks. GPA's position is that it's appropriately and properly awarded to the lowest responsible and responsive bidders. Shanghai, as it's admitted in its brief, is a sophisticated bidder. It's developed projects and sites across the country, in Japan, China, and elsewhere. It now claims that somehow it was misled by the specifications in the bid. Well, there were numerous opportunities for Shanghai to question if they had concerns about these concerns now that they're raising. They either didn't or didn't take the opportunity to do that prior to the bid. There was an extensive opportunity prior to the technical proposals being submitted. There were seven bidders that each submitted two 30 megawatt sites, which were opened by GPA in January 2017. At the time, the evaluation committee looked at the awards and awarded the four lowest site proposals. Now, Shanghai as previously indicated, we said they were number five and number seven bidder. So now they've indicated that due to the failure of one of the bidders to qualify and give a tie-in to the grid, that now they're number five and six. Well, simply that's quite it. They aren't the lowest bidder. They aren't even close to that. I mean, if we want to look at the prices that are there, I've set those forth in the brief. It's quite a difference in price. Whether the option is awarded or not, the prices are significantly different. The Hanwha price sites are 0.062 cents and 0.065 cents. KEPCO for both sites are 0.0855. And the Shanghai price is 50% higher than the KEPCO prices for the first price of 0.128 cents and 0.161 cents per kilowatt hour. The bid specifications were clear that each proposal would be evaluated based on the bidder's guaranteed minimum energy production and the price per kilowatt hour. GPA properly evaluated those technical price proposals based on the prices that were offered, and each bidder submitted a proposal for a microgrid. If there was some question about that, they certainly could have asked questions before the technical proposals were required to be submitted, but each of the three bidders here today, Shanghai, Hanwha, and KEPCO, did in fact submit a price proposal for that. The microgrid price for Hanwha that proposed is $1.28 million per site per year, and would still with the additional minimum energy guarantee required. Shanghai Next claims that doubling the size of procurement to 120 megawatt was improper and that the procurement must be rebid. Well, let me clarify that. If they get the award, then the bid is perfect. If they don't get the award, then they're asking the OPA to rebid the entire project. So that's a little unusual. I know that's certainly an alternative way of looking at things, but all of the bidders had the opportunity to bid as many sites as they wished to. The only restriction on GPA's bid was that each site could only exceed, may not exceed 30 megawatts per project. And each of those seven phase two qualified bidders, which included the three here, the three bidders here before you today, as well as the other four, submitted two project sites each of 30 megawatts each. Shanghai now contends that had it known that GPA intended to award 120 megawatts total, it would have bid four 30 megawatt projects, and due to efficiencies of scale, would have been a lower price per unit of renewable energy. Well, that's quite interesting, because if you look at the so-called economies of scale for the two prices that Shanghai submitted, their prices were, for adjacent sites, 0.128 per kilowatt hour and 0.1613, almost 30% higher than the first price. So obviously there weren't any economies of scale for those two sites, so it's not very reasonable to assume that if they had four sites that were close together, there would be any more efficiencies to scale. There's no efficiency to scale regarding the land size needed for each project because, unlike other things, the PV panels require additional land size in proportion to the additional PV panels that are added for each project. Also, the greater the size of the project, the larger the size of the transmission lines that are required for those projects. In this case, there was no single 120 megawatt award to a single bidder, but instead there were two 30 megawatt projects awarded to two separate bidders, Hanwha and KEPCO, who each had proposals that were significantly lower than Shanghai. Shanghai also complains that now the specifications are ambiguous and unfair, particularly regarding the underground transmission lines. Somehow, GPA said that it strongly recommends underground lines for interconnection between the renewable generation and GPA power system. Nowhere in the bid specification does GPA require underground transmission lines for any bidder. In fact, GPA pointed out that it did identify transmission costs at $1.24 million for overhead lines and almost double at $2.20 million per mile for underground. Each bidder, including Hanwha, KEPCO, and Shanghai, and the other bidders, had an option to price underground or overhead. Shanghai did not seek any clarifications whether overhead was a requirement, but now says that due to the strong recommendation for overhead lines, somehow it priced that, and so therefore its costs were higher. But in fact, the bid requires that it be evaluated on the requirements set forth in the bid. Council acknowledges there was no credit involved for using underground lines. In fact, the bid does set forth the evaluation criteria, which was clear, and if it wasn't clear, Shanghai could have requested clarification prior to the awards being submitted. Shanghai requests that the Hanwha bids be disqualified and rejected, and the Shanghai sites 2 and 1 be awarded. And then in the alternative, it says, well, if the OPA doesn't agree with that, then do the rebid everything over. Well, the simple matter of fact is all of the seven bidders that qualified for the technical stage put a lot of time and money into not only acquiring property or the right to lease the property or buy the property with options, but they put time and money into putting forth and doing the requirements for the award. It would be unfair for any of these bidders at this time to rebid the entire process merely because one bidder didn't win and clearly wasn't the lowest bidder. Now, there's also the concern about the LEAC rates, and the LEAC rates have gone up and down since the LEAC was enacted. At the time of the previous award to Quantum and now NRG Energy, the LEAC rates were higher, and so therefore it was appropriate that GPA put in an award allow an award under the LEAC and lowest avoided cost for those bidders. GPA has awarded and requests that the OPA allow the award for to Hanwha and KEPCO as the lowest responsive and responsive bidders. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Camacho?
I've actually offered Ms. Ariola to proceed first.
Ms. Ariola, is that okay? Yes, thanks.
As I stated previously, I represent KEPCO LGCNS Consortium, and I will refer to them throughout this hearing as KEPCO LGCNS. This power project is extremely important to Guam and to the people of Guam. We have critical, essential power needs. This is a bid that is not like computer services, laptops, or buses. This is about power, an essential need for our community. This bid is also required by public law. Our law requires that GPA come up with renewable energy resources projects, and this is phase two of that particular project. Shanghai's protests in this case really revolves on three primary issues which have been stated by both counsel. The first is that doubling the size of the program procurement from 60 megawatts to 120 megawatts was impermissible. The evidence will show, and in fact the evidence has already shown, because we have submitted all of those documents. Every single party has done this. We have submitted all the documents which show that, like any other procurement, a government of Guam agency has reserved the right to increase or decrease quantities or amounts of items. In addition, all of the bidders were on an equal playing field. All seven qualified bidders submitted bids of 30 megawatts for each project site, including the appellant in this case, Shanghai Terra. Secondly, they argue that GPA failed to state unambiguously whether underground or overhead transmission lines were required. The IFB and the comments and the addenda are very clear. GPA strongly recommended underground transmission lines, but they left it to each bidder to decide whether or not to include overhead or underground transmission lines in their bid. So they were free, like my client, to include both. So it's an unfair thing to say and to come in at this point and to say, oh, you know, we had no idea. This was not a requirement. It was ambiguous. It was not, and the evidence shows that. The third ground is that GPA failed to disclose if the bids must be at or lower than the current LEAC rate. The IFB technical requirements are very clear. They define what avoided costs are, and then in the amendment number two, it states very clearly, we would prefer that the costs be at or below the LEAC rate. You can't get any clearer than that. One of the main arguments that we have raised in our hearing brief is that Shanghai Terra has waived, is estopped, or is barred by the doctrine of latches from coming forward at this late date to challenge the bid on those grounds. Because every single one of those grounds could have been challenged, could have been clarified prior to the filing of a protest or even prior to the submission of bids by any of the bidders. They failed to do that. As a consequence, Hanwha, one of the winning bidders, and we ourselves, KEPCO LGCNS, have suffered extreme prejudice and damages. We will show through the testimony of our witnesses how much time, expense, and delay we have suffered as a result of this particular protest and the delay caused by this appeal. Shanghai and Terra have basically asserted irreconcilable arguments. First, they argue the bid was so defective, so ambiguous, that we must rebid the entire thing, cancel it and rebid the entire thing. But at the same time, they are arguing, oh, Hanwha's bid should be canceled, and we get first and second runner-up. You should award the bid to us. Those positions are irreconcilable. Either the bid is so defective it needs to be canceled, or you must uphold the awards to the two winning bidders. We submit that the awards need to be upheld, and our evidence will prove that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blanchard.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Public Auditor, Hearing Officer Paris. Similar to the Shakespearean play, Much Ado About Nothing, the events in this appeal that Shanghai Electric alleges implies that there is a significant fuss to be made of something that in fact is really insignificant. Because as the other parties detailed, there was no ambiguity to the bids. If there was, there could have been, should have been, and would have been protests prior to bid submissions. All of Shanghai's claims are unfounded and are just a desperate attempt to exclude Hanwha, the lowest bidder, and KEPCO, the next lowest bidder, so that they will be able to step in. As KEPCO's counsel elaborately described, you cannot reconcile the fact that there's an ambiguous IFB and yet award. What the evidence is going to show, even more disturbing, is Shanghai's attempt to disparage Hanwha since the protest. It alluded to Hanwha colluding with GPA. The evidence will show there is no such thing that ever happened. It asserts that Hanwha was involved in incidences of corruption and fraud without any whatsoever evidence presented in their briefs or with their appeal. The fact that evidence will show that's documented in the procurement record is that Hanwha has not been implicated or convicted of any such grounds. With regard to the microgrid, Shanghai keeps alluding to the fact that Hanwha was in cahoots with GPA in making this $54 million award. The evidence is going to show that is not the case. It was GPA who needed the microgrid in order for the projects to work. Hanwha had no participation in coming up with the microgrid, and it was a result of the system impact study that required the discussion. That's all it was. The resolution provided for the CCU will indicate that. If you look at the resolve in the resolution, there was no award for the microgrid at that time. It said GPA was considering the award. That was the document that was before the CCU to be approved. Going back during the IFB process, Shanghai says there was no inclination that GPA was going to make the award with the microgrid. That is not the case. Again, if you look at Amendment Number 8, it specifically says Hanwha or GPA, until a proponent specifies a point of interconnection with GPA's power grid, GPA cannot have meaningful discussions on the specifics of the microgrid. So the issue of the microgrid did not come up until after the lowest bidder and the most responsible bidders have already been determined. You can't come in and say, we weren't allowed to participate in anything after the recommended. Of course not. You know who paid for the system impact study? It was the bidders. Why would the unsuccessful bidders pay for a system impact study when they wouldn't be awarded the bid? It just doesn't make sense. So a lot of the fuss that Shanghai makes is much ado about nothing. What is significant in this case, and what KEPCO's counsel has already brought up, is the fact that the ratepayers of Guam will be paying a lower rate of energy production for the distribution than the current rates under the LEAC rate, which is based on the fuel prices. There's no fuel involved here. All of us see our power bills. 60% of our power bills are the fuel charge. It's alarming. So the fact that GPA is required and mandated by public law to institute phase two of renewable energy, and the fact that you have two successful, responsive, and responsible bidders is a testament to the fact and the hard work that GPA has put in. In this case, the Guam ratepayers will benefit from clean energy at the lowest cost, which provides sustainability to Guam's environment. Other than that, Shanghai's evidence, or whatever they purport to be evidence, cannot substantiate the request to disqualify Hanwha. Based on the evidence that will be presented throughout the hearing, Hanwha's bid will continue to be the lowest responsible and responsive bidder, and as such, GPA's award to Hanwha and KEPCO should be sustained. Thank you.
Thank you. CPJ, do you have your first witness?
Yes, we'll call Dale Gaffier. We provided our exhibit books to everybody. I assume everybody has a copy.
Do you please state your name for the record?
Dale Albert Gaffier.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated.
If you would take a look, Mr. Gaffier, at the exhibit book that's in front of you, and look at exhibit 31 at the end.
Got it.
Is that your resume?
That is my resume.
What is your profession, sir?
So I am a licensed professional mechanical engineer with over 35 years of experience in the power and energy industry.
Okay. Where did you graduate? Where did you obtain your degree?
So my undergraduate degree is from the University of Arizona, Tucson, bachelor's in mechanical engineering. My graduate degree is from the University of San Diego.
What was your graduate degree in?
It's an MBA.
Now, who's your employer?
So I'm employed by AECOM. I have been there just over 12 years. AECOM is a global engineering infrastructure construction company. We have approximately 90,000 employees. We're headquartered in Los Angeles, and we're in 150 countries around the globe.
150 companies.
Countries. 150 countries.
How is that? Is that AECOM?
AECOM.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's an engineering firm, I take it.
Engineering, professional services, infrastructure, and construction company.
What is your position at AECOM?
So I am the regional business line leader for power and energy for the Western U.S. and the Pacific region.
Well, what is your own experience in the field of alternative energy?
Okay. So I started my career 35 years ago in the conventional power industry. I worked 10 years for Solar Gas Turbines, which is a subsidiary of Caterpillar, and it's the world's largest gas turbine manufacturer. Worked there 10 years initially in design, moved into project management, managed power projects, cogeneration projects of all types, both domestically and internationally. I went from there into the independent power industry and worked on large utility scale natural gas fired projects. About 15 to 20 years ago, I moved into the renewable energy space, which consists largely of landfill gas, biogas, wind, and solar. I was for 10 years the market segment leader for AECOM, all of U.S., for our renewable market segment, again, which is the four technologies primarily: wind, solar, biogas, and landfill gas.
Let's just focus on utility-scale solar projects.
Yes.
What is your experience specifically in that area?
So I have been responsible as project manager and as project director on a number of projects, both for utilities directly as our client and also for developers, where we were developing utility-scale projects, both the design and the construction, for development partners, such as the Shanghai Terra development partners here, and both domestic and internationally.
What countries?
South Africa, Australia, and the U.S.
Okay. Now, well, what was the involvement of AECOM in this procurement?
So AECOM was invited by the project sponsors to be the engineering, procurement, and construction contractor. So what we did was we partnered up with local engineering firms and a local contractor who would actually do the actual construction. We would be do the much of the design work, procure all the materials for the project, and contract as a general contractor with local construction.
And then what was specifically your role in that?
So for this particular project, or projects, the two projects, I was the project director. So I worked with our project manager and his engineering and construction team. I worked with our sub-consultants and subcontractor in preparation of the bids, and also closely with the project sponsors to ensure that we had a very responsive bid.
So just for clarification, your client is Shanghai?
Yes. The consortium of Shanghai and Terra Energy.
Right.
Yes.
First about the microgrid.
Okay.
Could, for purposes of this procurement, how would you describe a microgrid?
Yeah, that's a good question. A microgrid, just across the board, doesn't have a strict definition. You know, when you talk about a gas-fired power plant, you know, gas turbine-based, very specific definition of what that project looks like, with some variations. But a microgrid today is not as well defined. It, generally speaking, it consists of a number of generating assets. It consists of critical loads. It consists of SCADA systems. It may include energy storage, but it doesn't have to. And most importantly, it includes a host control system to manage all of these disparate assets that normally are packaged within a microgrid.
I'm going to ask that you look at Exhibit 1 in the binder in front of you, and that is entitled Amendment 4 for the IFB in this case. I'm going to ask that you look at the second page in the binder, and I know this is an excerpt from that amendment. It's at the bottom is page 5 of 48.
Yes.
And this is a bidder question.
Right.
I'll read the question, which I've highlighted. Kindly explain the purpose of microgrid operation of RI-ESS as well as the required function. Would you read the highlighted portion of GPA's response?
Sure. GPA's requirements for microgrid are informational only, period. GPA will eventually develop plans and execute projects to establish microgrids supporting major loads.
Okay, I don't believe the word only was in there. It just says the microgrid is informational.
Microgrid are informational.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did I
add
that?
Yeah, no. I, what did that mean to you when it says it's important?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that it was what we would commonly refer to as an RFI, Request for Information, which is a non-binding submission to further support, as GPA indicates here, future projects that might be considered microgrid.
Would you turn over to page 37, you'll see that at the bottom, it's about four pages in. There's another highlighted portion.
37 of 48?
Yes.
Okay. I'm there.
I'm going to read the question that's highlighted. There are no microgrid technical requirements provided in the IFB. Please provide all requirements, including hourly load profiles, duration of operation, frequency of service for the request microgrid operation to be priced. And again, what was GPA's response, the highlighted portion?
Identically the same. GPA's requirements for microgrid are informational, period. GPA will eventually develop plans for and execute projects to establish microgrids supporting major loads. Okay. So
does this mean they did not, I mean, in the IFB.
Mr. Mann, I apologize. What page was that on again?
Yeah, at the bottom, it's page 37 of 48 in Exhibit 1.
Okay, all right, thank you.
And it's a highlighted portion.
So this was the second time they were asked, GPA was asked the very same question. Please give us some definition around what you're looking for us to notionally price for the microgrid. And notionally is not my words. If you read the next two sentences, GPA has communicated this opportunity and desire some of its largest customers who might need additional energy security, period. Any cost information provided by bidders is notional and non-binding. So again, we took that on face value, which is give us your best estimate.
But to actually make a bid, would you need to know what is being requested?
You'd need to know a lot about what was being requested. As I alluded to, microgrids are not well defined at this point. They kind of mean what people want them to mean at certain times. So you would need detailed design and specifications. And specifications speak to some of the questions that were asked in this particular question 9.3 to better inform the bidder as to what they're actually bidding on. But there were no specifications.
I'd ask you to turn to Exhibit 8. What is that?
So that represents what, in our best judgment, what we thought the portion of our bidded project that would fall under the definition of microgrid.
And then look at Exhibit 9. What is that?
Likewise, that also represents what we thought were those portions of our base bid project could reasonably fit into the definition of microgrid as provided to us by GPA.
So this represents one microgrid for each of the two projects?
This represents one microgrid for each of the two projects.
Okay, and the figures are the same for both?
Yes, because the fact of the matter is that with the ambiguity that was surrounding the question about the request for information about the microgrid pricing, we were not able to include any site-specific pricing. What we did was we took the energy storage pricing, which is what GPA hinted at, is that they wanted to see in the microgrid, and we put that into this microgrid cost buildup. It was never intended to be an incremental cost to incorporate a microgrid into our project. It was really merely meant to demonstrate what a standalone microgrid, as defined by GPA, might cost.
Well, these prices here, I mean, starting out with year one, $409,500, and then increasing over the next 25 years, are those added on to your base bid?
No, no.
Why is that?
Because, again, this, as defined by GPA, in the IFB, the project already had the essence of a microgrid. All it took to get to the full-blown microgrid as defined by GPA was to add some SCADA and add a supervisory host control system to manage the system. But it was never meant to be layered on our base bid. It was always meant to be, you know, part of.
So is it accurate to say that most of the microgrid pricing here is already included in the base bid?
It is. Yes.
Well, if a bidder were to add a microgrid, would it have any additional expense whatsoever?
De minimis numbers, which would largely be the SCADA, which would have to be defined by GPA to be meaningful pricing, and it would include a supervisory host control system, which are somewhat industry standards. So that.
What sort of price are we talking
so
about?
So we're talking about between $500,000 and $1 million total to manage and operate the microgrid as defined by GPA.
So, I mean, if you add up all these figures for Shanghai Electric, for both of the microgrids, you get around $25 million.
Right.
So you're not actually talking about adding $25 million onto your base bill.
No, this was really meant to reflect what a standalone microgrid that would what it would comprised of if it were not attached to the renewable energy project.
Well, go at it the opposite way. If a bidder did provide a microgrid, what effect would that have on the bidder's base bid?
It would have no additional. It would have a de minimis cost impact on the base bid to include the microgrid as defined by GPA.
Okay. Now, did this Shanghai, I don't know what exactly to call it. I won't call it a bid permit, a bid submission. I'll call it just a microgrid operation price. Did that provide any details on the microgrid that GPA would receive?
No, it didn't have any details because we couldn't. There were no questions or specs or a simple basis of design to even respond to. So there was some language in one of the Q&As that there was several Q&As that asked to define the microgrid, and it just was never defined. The default language was notional only.
Have you reviewed the Hanwha and KEPCO bid submissions with respect to microgrid pricing?
I did.
And what did you find?
I didn't find any details backing up their microgrid pricing offers as well.
So similar to Shanghai Electric, there were no details provided?
There was no details provided.
Okay. Let's look at Exhibits 6 and 7. What is 6?
So 6 is the microgrid cost data estimates, whatever we want to call it, the informational pricing provided by Hanwha for one of their sites.
And then look at Exhibit 7. What is that?
That would be the same pricing for their second site, which is identical. And the reason why, as I indicated earlier, they're identical because there's no definition from GPA to provide any refinement from one site to a second site in terms of the microgrid costing.
Okay, then I want to go to Exhibit 10 and 11.
Yes, so 10 is the microgrid cost data provided by KEPCO LG, and Exhibit 11 is also for their site 1, and Exhibit 11 is the cost data for the microgrid as presented by KEPCO LG for their site number 2.
Now, or B. I'm going to just advise you, and anybody can check my addition, but I'll advise you that if you add up the two Hanwha microgrids over the 25-year period, you'll get around $54 million. If you add up the Shanghai Electric, you're going to get around $23 million. And if you add up the KEPCO, you're going to get around $25 million. Now, can you explain the difference in prices?
I really can't. I think, first and foremost, it's rather interesting because the request by GPA for the informational pricing, the bit of definition they provided is that it was largely the energy storage piece of the project. And Shanghai Terra proposed energy storage at least 50% greater than the Hanwha KEPCO bids. So one would think that the cost would have been higher for the microgrid by Shanghai Terra, but the fact is there wasn't enough definition to adequately inform all the details of the microgrid. But its basis was the storage. But I can't tell you beyond that because there was no specs or basis of design provided by GPA.
But, okay, so None of these amounts are to be added to the base bid for any of the three bidders, is that correct?
Not based on the definition provided by GPA, correct.
So in that sense, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it's $54 million or $25 million or $23 million, but you're not adding that onto the base bid. Would that be fair?
That's correct. Nor, again, as we read in the Q&As from GPA, it was informational.
Okay. If I'd ask you to go to Exhibit 4.
Before we go on, again, just for my own clarification. So what is the microgrid supposed to do in connection with this project? Since you did do something,
yes.
So what is the microgrid supposed
to
do?
So in this particular instance, what the microgrid was doing was, I believe, because it was not well defined.
Okay.
But
thank
I believe,
you.
Yeah, no, you're not the only one.
Okay.
That I believe, our team believed that the purpose of the microgrid was to give some additional stability to the GPA grid. So what GPA was asking, we think, is if your energy storage system, which is designed to support your solar project, if we wanted it to also provide some support to the grid, what would that look like from a cost perspective?
When you say the grid, meaning GPA's main grid?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
In other words, to supplement its main grid.
Yeah. In other words, if you had a project that was just doing that, how much would it cost us? But the fact is that the storage isn't doing just that. It's doing both. It's supporting the solar project, and it was supplying grid support, helping the grid.
Helping the grid.
Helping the grid, yeah. More stabilization, voltage regulation, frequency control, those kinds of things.
I'll ask GPA that same question later on.
Mr. Madden, let me ask you a question, just in terms of your argument. So what I'm hearing is that the microgrid prices from the bidders was not an add-on to their base price bid in the IFB.
That's correct.
Is that the point?
That's correct.
But then what about with respect to the award? Did it increase the value of the award to the successful bidders?
That's my next exhibit.
But is that where you're going?
Right.
So if SEPJ was awarded, it would have had a correspondingly higher award?
Well, no, if I could clarify with the witness. Our position is the microgrid is not part of the procurement in the first place. It's not. There's no specifications required. It's impossible that it could be because there could be no competition. What are you bidding? If there's no definition, therefore there could be no competition for a microgrid. This is, I think, maybe another way to explain it is, as the witness could, an allocation. Perhaps that's a better way to explain it,
right.
I could ask the witness to explain it that way.
So the base solar project had some attributes that would support this microgrid, but GPA was asking for a standalone microgrid costing. So. But what you could do is you could take some of the attributes in the base project, add a few more items to it, de minimis dollars, and make it into a standalone grid support system. And that would be the standalone price. But when you marry the two, you get the benefits that you already have the energy storage in the base solar project. And then you just add in some SCADA and a grid control support system, and there you go. So if it were standalone, it would look like this. When you marry the two, there's no difference in price.
So I guess I'm...
As defined by GPA, the microgrid as defined by them would be, you know, layered on top of the existing project, and you would not add the cost to it.
But does the successful bidder get more money from GPA in the end?
They shouldn't.
To the tune of $54 million?
They shouldn't.
They should or should not.
No.
But is that the argument, that that's the result?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay, if you look at Exhibit 4.
Exhibit
4. That is the CCU Resolution 27-25. And I'm going to ask you to turn over to Exhibit B. Well, first, I'm sorry, let's go back to Exhibit 4, first page. I've highlighted the portion there. Do you see the highlighted portion?
Yes.
Okay, could you read that?
Whereas GPA is considering the Hanwha microgrid operations option to improve management of system generation and dispatching, which would be in addition to the proposed energy rate. Exhibit B provides a summary of the Hanwha microgrid operations.
When it says that would be in addition to the proposed energy rate, is that true? Is that correct?
From the information that we were provided from GPA, it should not be.
Well, let's look at Exhibit B. Can you explain what that exhibit shows, that chart?
So Exhibit B is showing the two Hanwha sites and their respective base pricing, their guaranteed generation, the cost of the microgrid, which is exactly the same as bid for both sites, and then that microgrid price turned into a levelized cost per megawatt hour, and then the adjusted rate, which adds the base price plus the microgrid price to give you the final price in, which column that is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth column for each of the two sites.
Does this chart show that GPA is, would have been through these figures over 25 years, around $54 million, that GPA is adding $54 million onto Hanwha's base bid?
Bids, yes.
And is that proper or improper from your understanding?
It does not seem proper.
If they did this, would Hanwha receive like basically double recovery for its microgrid and also for the items included in its base bid?
For a significant portion of the energy storage.
And it's your testimony that virtually all of the expense of the microgrid is already included in the base bid?
Correct.
So this is just doubling.
This is layering on.
Layering on.
Did Shanghai have an opportunity to submit a similar schedule?
Yes, we did. That was Exhibit 4. No.
Well,
we just went through the numbers. Oh, sorry, 7. So we submitted
8 and 9.
That's correct. That was the pricing that we submitted for the microgrid, which, as you can see, is substantially less than.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Yes.
It's about half of, I think if you add that up, it's $23 million, roughly, which is about half of Hanwha. But the real question is, when you submitted this, did you anticipate that these amounts were supposed to be added on to Shanghai's base bid?
No.
No. Okay. And that's why it's informational.
Right.
Right. It's just informational.
Right.
Okay. Okay, I want to go on to a different subject now. What was your understanding of the size of this procurement?
Well, the IFB was unequivocal. It was stated to be 60 megawatts, no more than 30 megawatts from any particular site or project.
Would you take a look at Exhibit 12? That's the commercial terms and conditions of the IFB.
Yes.
Volume 1. And go to the next page and read the highlighted portion.
Sure. In this Phase 2 acquisition rebid, GPA intends to acquire a total of 60 megawatts of renewable capacity that can meet the following established requirements.
Did you keep up with the amendments and answers to bidder questions during the course of this procurement?
Yes.
Was there ever any suggestion that maybe it would be more than 60 megawatt?
No.
Okay. Were you involved in the pricing of Shanghai Electric's bid?
I was.
Okay. And could you describe generally what is involved in pricing a bid? What sort of work do you do?
So the first thing you do is you put together a basis of design. You've got to understand what the project looks like. So you put together a basis of design which incorporates the basic features of the project, which was, in this particular case, in conformance to the bid, we could go no more than 30 megawatts. So that was one of the basis of design. We looked at things such as solar production on Guam and decided what's the optimal solution in terms of a fixed tilt versus a tracker. We looked at site conditions. You know, we literally walked the sites. We physically looked at the interconnections so that we could develop a solution that was, we thought, was the best offer to a GPA in terms of having reliable generation at the most cost-effective price.
Do you also need to contact material suppliers to negotiate prices?
Yes. Well, we didn't negotiate price at the time, but what we did do was we got price quotes, which we included in our price buildup.
And also identify and negotiate with contractors?
Correct. Local contractor. Our local contractor. We absolutely went through all of the drawings that we put together with our local contractor to come up with all of our interconnect or all of our electrical costs, all of our site civil works, all of our environmental constraints, all of the above. You bet.
Okay, now purposes of your testimony, I ask that you assume that Shanghai Electric, if Shanghai Electric was aware that the procurement was for 120 megawatt and that it had bid for 30 megawatt projects,
right.
Assume that had been the case.
Yes.
Would there have been a difference in economies of scale associated with these four 30 megawatt projects versus two 30 megawatt products?
Yes.
And explain that if you would.
So you get significant savings when you scale up solar plants, right? They just scale up well. A lot of projects scale up better than others. Solar projects scale up very well. You get to amortize all of your engineering design costs over more megawatts. You get to amortize all of your construction management costs, project management costs, your development costs, your financing costs, and lastly, but not least, is your interconnection costs. Earlier, GPA had mentioned that we were bidding two adjacent sites and we had two different prices. We didn't get any economies of scale. They weren't adjacent sites. They were bid separate sites because to give some additional reliability to GPA, we felt that it was important to give a diversity of supply. So, but when if we'd gone to 120 megawatt solicitation, we would have then been able to capitalize on significant cost reductions, and one of the primary ones, one of the biggest ones, would be the interconnection costs.
With adjacent sites, you could have like one transmission line rather than two.
You could have one transmission line, one substation. You could have economies of scale in your energy storage systems. I mean, there would be significant economies of scale to be achieved if the solicitation was known to be double in size.
Okay, now, how about in negotiating with material suppliers?
You would get significant price concessions. If you were delivering the same products to the same location, the same island, in a series of material deliveries, you would get very significant price concessions from the module manufacturers, from the inverter manufacturers, from the racking systems, from the battery storage systems, because it's just very efficient to put those into a production line and have sequenced deliveries, same configuration, same location.
How about labor costs?
Labor costs, you would also get some economies of scale because as your labor force, especially in an area that hasn't built a lot of utility scale projects, there is some training on the early stages of the projects. And so as you continue through the build-out on the projects, you get more efficient, better trained workers, higher quality control, so you would get significant benefits there as well.
Yeah.
If you had to bring in some extra workers, your cost to house the extra workers would be reduced as well, because it would be spread over many more megawatts of power.
So at the end of the day, that you end up with a lower cost per unit of energy produced?
Correct.
The economy is of scale, an advantage to all bidders, isn't that true?
It is. Oh yeah, it wouldn't be just unique to us. All bidders would have benefited from it. So there would have been a downward pressure on the pricing as a result of stating what the actual acquisition size was versus then doubling it.
So GPA, do you believe, would have received an overall lower cost for the electricity procured?
I certainly can speak. Ours would have been lower.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you could have adjacent sites. As it stands now, the two sites that Shanghai Electric proposed are not adjacent.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That is
and
correct.
Why was that? Why not put them together?
Well, you know, the bid didn't explicitly say it, but when you're in an island environment like this, you must think reliability. It's got to be item number one. And the more megawatts that you aggregate in a certain contiguous location, your reliability drops off because you have less reliability of transmission. You're more susceptible to weather conditions. You know, solar projects, you know, the output drops when a cloud comes over. So the closer your sites are, you're going to be more susceptible to fluctuations in power. So we thought long and hard about that, but we felt that, you know, for the benefit of the grid, that having two distinct sites would be better, recognizing that you don't get all your economies of scale. But if you had a double the size solicitation, then you could double up your sites, still have diversity of supply, and have much better pricing.
Okay, so if you can do four 30 megawatt projects,
yep,
then you could have adjacent sites. You could pair them.
Yes.
60 at one
and
place.
And still getting some, again, diversity of supply.
Did any of the bidders in the current procurement have adjacent sites?
Hanwha does.
They have adjacent sites.
Contiguous sites, yeah.
And did the other bidders, the KEPCO, have sites at different locations?
I believe they do.
Yeah.
It wasn't as clear in their solicitation.
Okay. I want to go on
just
to
be clear again, your bid, meaning Shanghai's bid, the two projects are not adjacent.
They are not.
Okay. And Hanwha's bid
are side by side.
Are side by side. Thank you. And what about KEPCO?
I would defer to them. Are they contiguous?
Side by side.
Okay.
I want to go on to another subject now, this overhead versus underground lines.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you to look at Exhibit 16, which is stated to be Amendment 2, but it has answers to bidders' questions. I'm going to ask you to look at the third page in, where there's some highlighting, a bidder's question. You see that question 13?
I do.
Okay, I'll ask the question. Can interconnection lines go overhead, or do they have to be underground? Did you read the GPA's response in the highlighted portion?
I will. GPA strongly recommends underground lines for interconnection between the renewable generation and GPA power system for their substantially greater reliability, especially during destructive storms and typhoons. Guam often experiences relative to overhead lines.
Now, were you aware of that that position of GPA?
Yes, because it was asked multiple times by multiple bidders, if you know, for clarification, because this it's pushing you in a direction, but it's not a clear must-have or we don't care.
Okay. Well, did you agree with GPA's strong recommendation?
Well, we do. We did, and we still do. If you look at Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, as of this morning, They, 1 month, greater than 1 month after the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, they now have 20% of their power system back online, 80% off. So, yeah, we strongly agreed with that, and that's why we didn't put in a dual bid. That's why we put in a bid that we thought was delivering the greatest value to GPA.
What is the, compare the expense between underground and overhead.
Yeah, so GPA estimates that it's, I'm trying to remember, I think it's about 2-to-1 was their estimate.
Now look at Exhibit 15.
Underground being almost twice as expensive.
The second page,
yeah.
The highlighted portion,
right.
It says transmission cost per mile, referring
yep.
to overhead,
right.
at $1,240,000 per mile.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That's right.
And then underground of $2,220,000 per mile.
Yes.
Okay. Now, recognizing the difference in expense, and was that your experience too?
Yeah, actually, as we went through our bids, we came up with costs that were even greater than 2-to-1, and at least on one of the sites. And the main reason was that it was in a public right of way. There was safety and traffic concerns because it was going under an existing road where it was going to be. You know, so we had to have safety concerns. We had to have a more robust design. It has a lot of utilities already buried under the road. So it was actually greater than the differential or the 2-to-1 that GPA has identified as overhead being half the cost of underground.
At the time you did this bid, were you concerned that, well, some other bidder would go overhead and automatically underbid us? Was that a concern to you, or did you anticipate that?
You know, these are 25-year projects, and from our experience in constructing T&D facilities on island such as this, we're involved in a rebuild down in the Caribbean, we felt that the added cost was a small percent, although it's not insignificant, but a small percent to add that additional level of reliability. Because you don't have any grids you're connected to here. You are truly an island geographically and an island from a grid perspective. So we thought that GPA was giving us very strong guidance in saying, put your lines underground. Hanwha did in fact propose their projects with underground lines, as did we.
Capco,
I guess, proposed both. I don't know if they priced out both, but so everybody was very sensitive to being underground, and so, you know, we listened to the client.
But did GPA allow overhead lines in the case of Hanwha and Capco?
They have now identified both their projects as having overhead lines. They've gone away from, Hanwha's gone away from an underground line configuration.
Well, if Shanghai Electric had did above ground transmission lines, could you estimate the effect that would have had on
it? It would have been several million dollars less, because we were about 5.6 miles from Dandan over to Telefofo. So even, although it's a bit greater than this, even at GPA's $1 million a mile, we were about $6 million. We would have been cheaper by $6 million to go overhead versus underground.
Okay, finally, I want to go on to another subject here. LEAC.
Yes.
Can I just ask Mr. Mann, if SEPJ had bid overhead lines, would it have been lower than Hanwha or Tekken?
By itself, we would not have probably got there with just going overhead versus underground.
Thank you.
I understand.
But we don't know, right? Okay. We didn't price it out because we just felt that the reliability was very important.
Along those lines, even though, you know, it it's true that if we only look at overhead versus underground lines and adjust that as if Shanghai Power had used overhead lines, that would not reduce an enough differential to put your bids lower than KEPCO or Hanwha. If you add to that the question of microgrid, I mean, if microgrid is being procured, I mean, your microgrid bid was lower. Understanding that's not going to be awarded, but it's still lower.
Correct.
And then adding to that, at 120 megawatt, where you could take advantage of the efficiencies of cost.
A big component was our energy storage. Our energy storage was twice as large as bid by Hanwha at the direction of GPA, and it was almost 100% larger than KEPCO's. So that is a huge dollar amount that has a lot of value to a grid. You know, it could have been used in lieu of any microgrid solution and given more robust results. I think that's the bigger issue is, you know, it's not any one thing, but if you take the differences in terms of the additional features and value that we bid in, we would have been lower.
The storage aspect goes to the microgrid price.
But it's also in the base solar price. That's where it shows up. In the base solar price is the energy storage piece. And ours was greater than 50% of Hanwha's and almost 100% of KEPCO's.
Your storage meaning?
The battery storage, which gives the grid support.
Correct.
And stabilizes the solar project, which it does both at the same time. By stabilizing the solar, you stabilize the grid. So, big differences.
Okay, going on to this LEAC issue, I'm going to ask you to look at Exhibit 22. Which is stated via Amendment Number 2. And I'm going to ask that you turn over to the next page.
Right.
And we're going to look at the highlighted portion, which is a bidder question. And I'm going to ask the question, which is, does the starting price have to be below the then current LEAC rate? What was GPA's response?
GPA's response was no. But GPA would like to see bids close to or lower than the current LEAC. And this question was asked multiple times with the same response because, you know, again, people wanted to know if that was going to be any type of benchmark.
And you were familiar with that as the question was asked.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, well, what is LEAC?
So LEAC is the Levelized Average Energy Clause or cost. The phrase is kind of double-headed. So like a lot of island grids, GPA is highly liquid fuel dependent. Liquid fuel more than coal, more than natural gas, from fossil fuel perspective, is highly volatile. So GPA created this mechanism to smooth out the month-to-month fuel price impact on its customers. And LEAC is really intended to just address the fuel used to generate power, and again, it was just a mechanism to smooth out that fuel component of the power pricing.
Do electric utilities in the mainland U.S. have this concept of a LEAC rate?
No, they don't, because again, they contract for long-term supplies of fuel. They're contracting this, you know, certainly in the lower 49, everybody uses natural gas, coal, nuclear, predictable fuel pricing versus oil, which is very, arguably very tough to predict month to month even. We all see from driving our cars.
Well,
so
are there other
locations?
Hawaii has a very similar term.
Okay.
Yeah, the utility can't take the risk of these fuel fluctuations. So they have arrangements with the Public Utilities Commissions to pass these fuel costs on, but try to smooth them out a little bit for their customers. So you don't see your monthly bill doing this.
Now, GPA, Mr. Vashu, argues at this time that bids must be lower than, quote, actual current avoided cost. And GPA now claims that actual current avoided cost is the same as its LEAC rate. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I disagree.
And why is that?
Well, LEAC, as we identified, is just the fuel adjustment clause or charge. Avoided cost, long-term avoided cost, which is what these solar projects are, they're 25-year projects. Long-term avoided cost takes into account not only the fuel, but it takes into account the operations and maintenance, the debt service, the insurance, the pole lines, and all these costs rolled up that the actual utility has to pay for. And so avoided cost is a much more representative cost to the utility for its production.
Would you look at Exhibit 24 and identify that?
Yeah, so this is you know, a definition of avoided cost, and there's two types. One is short-run avoided cost, which looks a little bit like LEAC. It tends to focus more on the fuel component, but the long-term avoided cost is the right comparator to use for these projects because they're 25-year projects, and they're predictable. You get a 25-year pricing sheet. You know what that megawatt hour is going to cost you every year. So it has the certainty of you don't need a LEAC. A LEAC doesn't have any relevance to a solar project. What it really is compared to is a long-term avoided cost.
Take a look at Exhibit 25, if you would. And that, does that provide further information about the distinction between short-run and long-term?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of described that, right? The short-term is more fuel-centric. What does it cost to either make one more kilowatt hour or reduce your output by one more kilowatt hour? And that's largely the fuel cost. A little bit of O&M, but not a lot. But really, when you get into long-term avoided costs, that's where you get into what's the full cost to produce power.
And so for a 25-year procurement, it would be long-run?
It would be long-term avoided cost is the right benchmark.
Can long-run avoided cost be calculated by GPA?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I don't know if they calculate it. I haven't seen it published. But certainly long-term avoided costs can be calculated by GPA.
Oh, do utilities in the mainland U.S. calculate
that
long-term?
Yeah, they typically do, because that's how you do a lot of your resource planning, is based upon your future predicted power costs.
Mr. Mann, just for clarification, so the first argument is that the LEAC rate is not the benchmark that was envisioned by the IFB.
That is our position.
And then the testimony regarding the long-term avoided cost is for where does that take us?
Well, GPA claims that it statutorily is required that bids be below. It cannot accept bids above actual current avoided cost, and that's in the statute, so we accept that. But the question is, the problem we have with that is that GPA equates its LEAC rate to its actual current avoided cost, and that's what we're challenging. To your knowledge, has GPA calculated its avoided cost for the future?
I haven't seen it. I would think that it would be part of their integrated resource planning, but I haven't seen it.
Could you calculate it?
I couldn't calculate it. No. You need a lot of, it's a very rigorous process that you do a lot of modeling, because you have to do a lot of what ifs, because you don't know, the future is anything but certain. So you have to do a lot of what-ifs, and you get sort of a forward-looking of long-term avoided costs that may be higher. It's going to be higher or lower. It's not going to be exactly as you projected. But that's why you keep doing updates to your integrated resource planning to not get too far away from your projections versus your actual.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Botha?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Gauthier. I guess we'll have to step back to where we first started. You indicated that, in your opinion, the microgrid option was just something that should be included with a bid for the same price. Is that correct?
As we interpreted the requirements of the microgrid by GPA, which was energy storage centric, the answer is yes.
Okay, but in fact, I believe that was Exhibit 8 and 9, you did put in a separate price for that.
We required a separate sheet.
Right. And
yeah,
so,
a breakout.
And a separate breakout does indicate that, I think, and I'll accept for this purpose, Mr. Mann's calculation that totals $23 million over the 25 years. I guess that's what we're looking at. And okay. So that is a separate price from the bid price that you actually put in.
It's a breakout price.
But on the bid price, you put in a price of 0.128 per kilowatt hour.
Correct.
And so this is independent of that particular price.
It's a breakout for that price. In other words, it's a subset of that price. GPA requested that we provide them an annualized cost for a microgrid, and this is a subset of our base pricing. In other words, if they did a standalone microgrid project, this is what it would cost.
Okay, so if GPA had asked you, if you had won the bid and were asked for a microgrid, you would not have charged GPA anything additional?
Well, we would have had to see some specifications or base of design. But based on what was in the bid, no, we would not have charged any extra.
Okay. And it did indicate on Exhibit 1 that the microgrid technical requirements wouldn't be done until the proponent specified a point of interconnection. Could you explain why that is?
Let's see. Where are you?
That's on, I believe, page 37 of Exhibit 35.
Okay, and where are you referencing?
Okay, this is the 37 of 48.
Yep, on that page.
And it says, I believe you had read off the...
the question?
Right.
The question said, there are no microgrid technical requirements provided in the IFB. Please provide all requirements, including hourly load profiles, duration of operation, frequency of service for the request microgrid operation be priced. And then the underlined answer was, GPA requirements for microgrid are informational. GPA will eventually develop plans for and execute projects to establish microgrid supporting major loads.
Okay, and then if you look down... about halfway down the down the page, it says, until proponents specify a point of interconnection.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Do you want me to read that?
Yes.
Until proponents specify a point of interconnection with GPA power system grid, we cannot have a meaningful discussion on specifics.
Okay, and why is that the interconnection is important to that?
Because of, in my opinion, because of the SCADA requirements. In other words, the SCADA requirements are going to be a function of the actual interconnection point, not the energy storage component to it, not the system control, grid control system, but the SCADA, which is a de minimis amount of a microgrid cost.
Except if it were standalone, then that would match your exhibits in 8 and 9.
Except.
Your prices. If the microgrid option was standalone, then
yes.
That would be the basis of your
yes.
Pricing in exhibit 8 and 9.
Based on the information that we got. From GPA, correct.
Right, and you indicated that because of the ambiguity and obviously no site-specific pricing, therefore you just used the energy cost pricing of your bid.
The energy storage component pricing plus SCADA, plus a modest amount of SCADA, as well as a grid controller, yes.
Okay, so if there were all those confusing aspects of the price sheet that were there, why would you bid at all?
Because we were asked to.
Okay, well,
GPA said, we're not going to, this is not firm pricing you're submitting to us, so provide it to us as informational. Okay, said.
So, but there was no requirement in the bid to fill out that specific price sheet on the,
You know, I don't remember. I don't remember if it was a requirement or not, but we in the spirit of providing what was asked for, we filled it out.
Okay. And then your pricing is that you put for the two specific sites is still specific as to the kilowatt pricing of 0.128 and 0.16.
Inclusive. It's included in, yes.
Can I just ask Mr. Botha, what do you mean by, I mean, you referred to, I guess, the pricing as being de minimis.
Right.
But then...
In other words, to go from the solar energy storage project to go to a microgrid.
Okay.
If you said, I want to make your project not only a solar energy and storage project, I want to make it a microgrid, right?
Right.
That cost adder is de minimis.
Okay, and the price proposal from SEPJ, including the microgrid pricing, that was the microgrid was a breakout?
Standalone. It was a breakout, and it was it was intended to be a standalone project. Because the way we read GPA's requirements is, hey, we're going to be looking at microgrids down the road. Can you help us out, since you kind of are right in the midst of this pricing effort, right, for the solar energy project? Can you, this is my interpretation of what was being asked. Can you help us out to give us some informational price on what a microgrid might cost?
But then if SEPJ had been awarded the proposal and
yep.
microgrid was included,
yep.
SEPJ understood that it wouldn't be getting
that additional dollars.
Value.
That's correct. That is correct.
But in this case, the argument is that the awardees are getting
It would appear. It would appear that to be the case.
Thank you.
That is, if the microgrid project is
proceeds.
Can GPA say is that the intention?
The CCU intended it.
Right, but was that GPA's intention in the IFP?
Well. The IFB didn't, as Mr. Guthrie's testimony, the IFB said it was informational pricing at the time of that. But then, given the benefits that could be added to the system, as Mr. Guthrie has testified, of system stability and all the rest of that, then GPA would find that advantageous to add the optional microgrid to the project.
Without doing a separate procurement.
Well, it was part of the pricing in all of the three bidders. In fact, I think all of the technical bidders did provide a price for a option bid for a microgrid. And as Mr. Gauthier has testified, that it appears to be a nominal additional expense to be added, provided they had submitted the battery. Met the battery storage requirements.
On that notion, if I may, Mr. Gardier, you said the reason yours is de minimis is because you had a lot more storage.
Which would dual purpose, that's correct. Which we actually sized it for the 85% that GPA put into the bid package. Other bidders did not provide that level of energy storage in their bid. We all bid 30 megawatt projects,
mm-hmm.
but we were the only ones that bid that level of energy storage in our project.
Meaning the battery.
The battery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah, when you say energy, when I say energy storage, I mean battery.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. Yeah. Same thing.
Meaning you could store up to 85% of whatever is generated from the solar.
That's one way to look at it. That's one way. In other words, the solar nameplate was 30 megawatts, so 30% or 85% of that was the nameplate on our battery energy storage system, which...
And was that a requirement in the bid?
It was.
And the other ones you're saying didn't?
They did not provide that level of energy storage.
if I could draw your attention to Exhibit 12, Mr. Gauthier.
Sure.
Okay, and page 9 of the 222, you indicated that, in the highlighted part, that GBA intends to acquire a total of 60 megawatts of renewable capacity.
Right.
Okay, and the next part does indicate that the maximum nameplate capacity is 30 megawatts. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and do you believe that there's any basis for restricting each site to a maximum of 30 megawatts?
Well, what we thought was that, you know, you didn't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So we felt that you were doing that from a prudency perspective, that you did not want to have one single 60 megawatt awardee. That's exactly what we thought. Reliability means a lot on an island.
Okay, is there, I think you indicated you're responsible for the overall design and interconnection point. Is it your understanding that the project site must be interconnected to a GPA substation?
Correct.
Okay. And were the Shanghai sites all both going to the same substation?
No, different substations.
Okay. And what would the maximum load capacity, to your understanding, be on a 34.5 kilovolt line?
About 30 megawatts.
So one project would fit on a 34.5.
Sit on a single circuit.
Okay. Now, if the two projects were going to the same substation,
yep.
As you indicated, for economies of scale, you would co-locate them.
Yep.
Wouldn't that require a bigger line capacity to handle it?
It would require a dual circuit,
right,
which would be cheaper. Two dual circuit for double the capacity is a lot cheaper than a single circuit of half the capacity.
Right, so it would either require two separate circuits on perhaps different power poles or a 115 kilovolt circuit.
It's another option.
Okay. And would those, if you had to put in additional power poles, given that the existing power poles were insufficient to handle those dual lines, would that not cost additional?
Yes, it would.
Additional cost.
Yeah.
And or if you went with a 115 kilovolt line, that would be substantially more expensive due to the wire costs?
Well, you know, it'd be more expensive, but the fact is that because you go much higher voltage, your copper is much less. So there's trade-offs in terms of capital costs for the same kW or megawatt production. But the fact is that a 115 single circuit carries substantially more power than a 34.5. So it's not necessarily the case that 115 would be more expensive. And it depends on, you know, if there's a spare breaker in the substation, a lot of different elements come into it. So it's not a black and white.
Okay. You indicated that four projects, if you had bid, would be substantially cheaper for Shanghai. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. But yet, how would you explain the differences between the prices for the two Shanghai bids that you submitted?
Largely, almost exclusively, interconnection. There was some civil works pricing differential, but the big difference between those two sites was the cost of interconnection.
Okay, so that's why you would agree, I guess, in this case, it's the SEP 1 bid is roughly 30% more in terms of...
I don't know what the percentages are. But
okay, but I think one is 0.128 and the other is 0.161. Does that sound accurate for the Shanghai bid?
I think
that, I mean, you have a document that shows that.
I think that's right.
I think you're approximately correct. I can find one.
But, yeah, the interconnection cost was substantially higher at one of the sites because, it's an economy of scale issue, right? You're only connecting 30 megawatts. It has to carry the entire Gen 5 cost, as opposed to if you spread it out over more megawatts, it's substantially cheaper.
Are there any economies of scale for the land area needed for each solar project?
A little bit, because, you know, I think everybody bid out a single axis tracker. Single axis trackers unlike the NRG site out there now, single-axis trackers, you have to put them in relatively disciplined blocks. So you can't just use every nook and cranny in a site. So the more, the larger space that you have, you can get economies of scale or efficiency of land use when you're talking about specifically a tracking system. You get efficiencies of land use. You do. And it's not insignificant. Like I said, a tracker, you've got to have discipline when you put in your blocks.
Okay, and so if you had bid four sites, you would have put all four of them together?
No, we would never have done that. Again, it gets back to the diversity of supply, as well as availability of land.
Okay. On Exhibit 16, Amendment 2, that is the one referring to underground versus overhead.
Yep.
That we've gone over.
Yep.
And I think you indicated that the in answer to the questions that were asked numerous times, can interconnection lines go overhead or do they have to be underground? And I think you read the strongly recommended underground lines for interconnection.
Yes.
Okay. But nowhere in there is there any requirement or a mandatory underground.
It does not say must. It says strongly recommends. And again, I'll point out a recent example of the destruction of overhead lines on Puerto Rico. It's going to be months before they get their grid back online.
Where in your understanding would be the metered connection for the solar project?
At the project substation, yeah.
So in other words, whether it was overground, overhead, or underground, wouldn't matter to the proponent?
From what perspective?
From pricing perspective.
No, it wouldn't matter from a delivery point.
That's correct.
That's correct.
So in other words, it would matter to the agency itself in terms of reliability, but to the proponent, as long as the proponent is able to deliver it to the project substation, small substation, if you will,
yeah,
then that is the proponent's only requirement.
Right.
Okay, and after the project is put in, everything after that metered subpoint would be the responsibility of the agency, GPA, to maintain
it? To maintain it, yes. The project sponsor would be responsible for causing it to be installed.
Okay.
That's right.
And then turned over to GPA?
Correct.
Okay, and I believe you indicated that the cost would be a small percentage of the bid, small cost, but not insignificant.
To go from underground to overhead?
Yes.
It would be many millions of dollars, which is on these size projects is not insignificant.
I think you indicated somewhere around $6 million.
That was on one of them, it would have been six. The other one would have been 8 to 9. They're different.
If you had taken that out of the bid and amortized it over the 25 years, as you said you would that have resulted in the Shanghai price being lower than KEPCO?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, well, I mean, if we took $15 million and amortized it over 25 years, that would be less than $1 million a year.
Yeah, it's not a straight amortization, though. I mean, there's tax benefits, depreciation benefits.
Assuming you would get Shanghai would get the same tax credit as all the rest of the bidders, 30%. I'm sure that's factored into the business model at some point. So, but surely $15 million over 25 years would not result in the price dropping 4 cents a kilowatt.
Just to go from underground to overhead?
Yeah.
Probably not. Okay. But I don't have a definitive answer on that. But I think the bigger difference would have been if there were two adjacent projects to to share either resource overhead or underground, depending on what.
But there was nothing prohibiting you in the submission of two sites to make it adjacent or not?
There was nothing explicit. Right. Yeah, it was implied in so much as that GPA was unwilling to buy 60 megawatts from any one project.
Okay, but there certainly was nothing prohibiting either sites from being
nothing
located.
Explicit.
In looking at Exhibit 24, I believe that was your discussion at LEAC.
Yes.
This avoided cost dictionary is used for utilities in the states. Is that not correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And specifically, I think I think it's talking about energy producers. The last paragraph, it meets the specifications of the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978. Is that the PURPA Act? Did you understand?
PURPA. That's PURPA.
Okay. And are you aware that Guam is not subject to PURPA?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's why you don't have to have a published avoided cost, because people can't sell that shit.
Right. Okay. And then in Exhibit 25, these definitions are used in California, where, as you indicated for the lower 49, that these kind of utilities can buy energy from either coal, natural gas, or nuclear at long-term contracts and energy contracts for that purpose, right?
That's right.
And I think you stated that certainly Guam, that wouldn't work the same way for Guam. Right?
It wouldn't work the same way. I think what we were trying to portray was the methodology that's used for short-term pricing versus long-term pricing.
And so, but I think Mr. Mann did indicate that there was a restriction. I mean, it may be a old one, but there was a restriction that was put in the Guam statute regarding renewable energy costs that indicated that it had to be below avoided costs. It's just your clarification as to what the long-term avoided or short-term avoided cost should be, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you're not disputing that part of it.
Which part?
Well, the part that there's an existing statute that says that the purchase price of renewable energy has to be below the avoided cost.
It's been modified since then, and the fact is that statute really predated 25-year PPAs, such as you are under consideration here today.
Right, but the statute's never been changed, has it?
Well, it's been modified and updated. I'm going to defer to the lawyers for that one.
So your clarification in Exhibit 24 and 25 as to what the long-term avoided costs should and how should be calculated, right?
Kind of how the difference between short-term and long-term costs and generally how the calculations are made, regardless of where you are.
Right, and so the short-term costs, I think, as you indicated, would basically almost be, or in Guam's case, would be based on the fuel costs.
Fuel costs.
Okay, and the long-term should include other costs besides just fuel costs.
Correct.
I don't have any further questions this time.
Ms. Ariella.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Gaultier?
Yeah, Gaultier.
Gaultier.
Yeah,
Thank you. Your
pronunciation is actually closer to the reality.
Thank you. Mr. Gaultier, can you please take a look at Exhibit 12?
12.
In the findings from
here.
And if you would take a look at page 9 of 222. Where it talks about the size of the project.
Yes.
It says, in this phase 2 acquisition rebid, GPA intends to acquire a total of 60 megawatts of renewable capacity that can meet the following established requirements. And the first one is the bidder's renewable resource project must, within a minimum nameplate capacity of 5 megawatts and a maximum nameplate capacity 30 megawatts. This may be the combination of several generation units
correct.
At one or more sites.
Right.
You read that, correct?
I have, yes.
Okay. And Shanghai understood what that meant?
Yes. Okay. What's your interpretation of it?
Well, the bidder's project must be a combination of several generation units at one site. And my question to you is, did you understand that GPA could increase or decrease the quantities or the amounts?
No, I think I have two issues with that. First off, when it says a combination of several generation units at one or more sites, they're talking about sub 30 megawatts. 30 megawatts is the largest contract total of any sites that would be contracted for under this RFP. That's
right.
What that's saying.
The IFP places no restriction on the number of projects that each bidder may submit.
Not the quantity of sites, but the 30 megawatts is a hard cap.
Right. The only restriction is that each project may not
exceed. Not each. No.
That's not what your not your interpretation of it?
No, not at all. 30 megawatts is the sum total of any and all sites. 5 megawatts is the minimum project site, but in no way shall the project sites accumulate a total more than 30 megawatts.
And Shanghai submitted 2 projects of 30 megawatts each for each site.
Yeah, but they were separate submissions.
Right. I understand that. I'm just asking. That's what Shanghai did.
Yes.
And to your knowledge, all 7 qualified bidders did that as well.
I don't know that to be true. I know we submitted 2 individual submissions because that's what the IFB required.
Okay. Did you read in the IFB Volume 1 at page 2 that GPA may elect to award 1, more, or none among the bidder's proposals? Do you remember reading that?
Yeah, I remember. That's standard contract language.
Right. And do you also remember reading that at IFB Volume 1, Volume 2 at page 14, Section 3.3.1, and IFB Volume 4 at page 6, Section 3.1, that GPA reserves the right to diversify its selections to provide, quote, a well-rounded portfolio of renewable resources, end quote. Do you remember reading that?
Yeah, I think I spoke to that earlier.
Okay. And can you take a look once again at Exhibit 12? Sorry, Exhibit 13.
Okay.
At the bottom of page 196, where it refers to award, cancellation, and rejection.
Right.
At the bottom of that paragraph, it states the government reserves the right to increase or decrease the quantity of items for award and make additional awards for the same type items, and the vendor agrees to such modifications and additional awards based on the bid prices for a period of 30 days after original award. Doesn't that say to you and to Shanghai that GPA reserves the right to increase or decrease quantities and items of award?
What it says to me is that standard procurement language. So when you're buying widgets, you know, you can buy 10% more widgets or 10% less widgets.
But it's the language in this IFB, correct? Yes or no?
Was it in the IFB?
It's the language in this IFB, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Let's talk about the interconnection costs. You read a paragraph that talked about how GPA strongly recommended underground transmission lines.
Right.
You read only a part of that question and answer, where you stated GPA strongly recommends underground lines for interconnection.
Where are you reading from? Take me back.
Oh, that is at the question and answer set 2, July 15, 2016,
what
question
section?
13.
What section in the
It's a question and answer set, and I believe you read it from one of the exhibits in the Shanghai exhibit book, the one where you stated GPA strongly recommends. Do you remember that?
I need it in front of me to actually speak to it.
Exhibit 15.
Uh,
Yeah, it's exhibit 16.
Is it 16?
Yes.
Okay, let's go there.
Page 4. You read only part of that. Can you read the entire answer, please?
Hold on. Okay.
It's question number 13.
Yes.
Can interconnection lines go overhead or do they have to be underground? Can you read the entire answer?
Sure. GPA strongly recommends underground lines for interconnection between the renewable generation and GPA power system for their substantially greater reliability, especially during destructive storms and typhoons. Guam often experiences relative to overhead lines. Keep reading.
Yes, please.
Also, our existing pole lines, our existing power poles do not have the capacity to accommodate additional 34.5 level transmission lines. The contractors who choose to build overhead lines to the interconnection point will have to put up new poles, even if there are existing GPA power poles along the route, or upgrade the existing lines. But GPA has to consider the cost of constructing underground lines is, in most cases, higher than the cost of building overhead lines. The location of the new on-site substation, the distance to the interconnection point, the system reliability, and the cost comparison between constructing between constructing underground and overhead lines will all have to be taken into account before making a decision. GPA will approach it on a case-by-case basis.
Let's look at that last line. GPA will approach it on a case-by-case basis. Doesn't that say to you that GPA is leaving it up to each bidder to determine whether or not to go with overhead or underground lines or a combination of both? Isn't that what it says?
It's not what it says to me.
That's your interpretation?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a look at what you stated earlier. You said we received, quote, very strong guidance from GPA that Shanghai should go with underground lines. Do you remember that testimony?
Well, I didn't say we received. I said it was included in the IFB.
As a strong recommendation, correct?
Right. That's right.
That's right. So when you say a strong recommendation, is it your understanding that a bidder will only take a strong recommendation from an agency rather than to take whatever option is available to them as stated here in this response?
If you want to maintain a relationship with your client, you got to listen to them.
But it was
a strong recommendation means we strongly recommend you do this. Doesn't mean you have to. It means strongly recommend.
Right. It doesn't mean that you have to. So it's totally up to the bidder to decide whether to go with overhead or underground lines or a combination of both. Isn't that true?
I don't know that I would agree with your word totally, but ultimately you could submit a bid for overhead lines given this, that it's not a requirement, it's a strong recommendation.
Right, it is not a requirement.
Strong recommendation.
Okay,
right?
And so in this case, the Shanghai Terra Consortium decided to go with underground lines, is that
correct.
Right?
That is correct.
Okay, it could have gone with overhead lines. Isn't that true?
Again, we looked at it from a reliability. I mean, it says the reason. This recommendation is not in a vacuum. It states the reason why underground lines are strongly recommended.
Let me ask it another way.
Okay.
Was there anything prohibiting the Shanghai Terra Consortium from submitting a bid with overhead lines?
There was a concern that it would be non-responsive.
Let me ask the question again. Was there anything prohibiting Shanghai Terra Consortium from submitting a bid with overhead lines under the IFB? Can you point to anything in the IFB that prohibited the consortium from submitting a bid with overhead lines? Anything at all?
Other than listening to strongly recommend.
Thank you. Now, you also talked about economy of scales and efficiencies. If, for example, your consortium had known that there would be 120 megawatts total awarded, right? Okay. And
In your testimony earlier today, you testified about the fact that if you had 120 megawatts, there would be, it would be more efficient in terms of labor costs, in terms of supplies, materials, manufacturers, equipment, et cetera. Yet in this case, Shanghai Terra only submitted bids for two non-adjacent sites, correct?
Correct.
Right, and you also testified a little earlier that if it was going to bid on a 120 megawatt total, you would still bid for non-adjacent sites, correct?
No, I didn't state that.
Okay, well, would you have bid for non-adjacent sites?
Yeah, because it would have been consistent with the messaging or the language in this original bid. This original bid said that we don't want to buy more than 30 megawatts from any one site.
So,
now, how do you define site?
So, how do you square that with your testimony that there are all these economies and efficiencies of scale of one interconnection site,
okay.
Hold on, one substation? How do you square that?
Here's how
I square it with your testimony.
Here's how I square it. The percent that you're bidding from two contiguous sites would still be the same percent, 50%, as bidding 30 megawatts in a 60 megawatt solicitation. That's how I square it.
Okay, let me ask you to look at it from GPA's point of view and the people of Guam's point of view. Wouldn't there be a risk for GPA to settle on one bidder at 120 megawatts rather than two bidders at 60 megawatts each, based on the possibility that that one bidder could go bankrupt or could not come up with the project as they claimed they would?
Sure.
Right?
Sure. That's why I think that the original 60 megawatt solicitation was structured not to buy all the output from one project. Same reason. But the point being, when we talk about the four sites and the efficiencies of scale, is at the 60 megawatt offering, you're getting the economies of scale, the efficiencies. So you've got two sites here, two sites here. There's no way that that GPA would have selected 120 megawatts for one bidder for four sites. I agree with you. But you get economies of scale at those two 60 megawatt sites.
So you're arguing that Shanghai Terra Consortium, if they had known about the 120 megawatts, they would have submitted two different bids at two different sites.
Which we did.
No, I'm sorry. Two different bids with 120 megawatts, 60 each, at non-adjacent but different sites. Is that your testimony?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm asking if there was a 120 megawatt project,
okay,
as you know, eventually turned out to be the case here,
yeah,
how would Shanghai Terra Consortium have submitted its bid?
We would have bid two 60 megawatt projects.
Non-adjacent.
No, adjacent.
Adjacent.
No, wait. I see how you're confusing me. Mm-hmm. Would the 60 megawatt projects be adjacent or the 230s?
Either. What would be more cost efficient? I mean, that's your whole testimony, right? It would be more cost efficient. How is it going to be more cost efficient?
If the bid had been set up for 120 megawatts, I would expect it to mirror the 60 megawatt IFB, which said we will buy no more than half from any one project. So none of my wildest dreams would I think the GPA would buy 120 megawatts from one developer at one location.
Okay, let's talk about the LEAC and the avoided cost. Do you agree that Guam law regarding the definition of avoided cost should control over the definition of avoided cost that you presented here today in your exhibits?
I object to the question. It's asking for a legal conclusion.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer.
Why don't you ask him for his opinion regarding the two?
Thank you. What is your opinion regarding the difference between the Guam law of avoided costs and whatever you've presented here today?
I think that the Guam law certainly did not consider QFs, as was mentioned earlier by GPA, because the QF definition in Guam is meaningless. So avoided costs was created such that QF providers could expect a certain level of treatment from a pricing perspective when they approach the utility to sell them power. That's how it all developed.
But law is what we have and is what controls here, isn't that right?
You know, you're asking me a legal opinion again. I don't know that, the answer to that.
Okay, I mean, my point is, regardless of how you define it or how it's defined in any of your exhibits, ultimately, what is avoided cost is what is governed by Guam law.
Well, GPA doesn't publish avoided cost. So you can use the word, but if it's not a published number, it doesn't have any meaning.
I'd like you to take a look at one of the exhibits that was submitted by Shanghai. It had to do with the LEAC rate, the reference to the LEAC rate, and that was amendment number 2. I believe that's at exhibit 21.
Exhibit 2.
You could take a look at question number 29.
Exhibit 22, page 7 of 21.
Question 29.
Yes.
Yes.
Page 7 of 21.
Yep.
So the question is, section 3, does the starting price have to be below the then current LEAC rate? Response, no, but GPA would like to see bids close to or lower than the current LEAC.
Mm-hmm.
You understood that when you read it?
Yeah.
Shanghai understood it when they read it?
You'd have to ask them, but I believe so.
Did they have any questions about that particular question or answer?
The answer says it doesn't have to be below current LEAC.
Did they have any questions or clarifications before they submitted their bid?
I don't think that response needs any clarification.
Thank you. So with the total output for the project, 60 megawatts versus 120 megawatts, did Shanghai Terra Consortium submit any questions to seek to clarify that particular definition or the size of the project before they submitted their bid?
There was no ambiguity in the IFB.
Okay, and there was also no ambiguity with the phrase that GPA could increase or decrease the quantities, correct?
That's a standard procurement clause that's used for commodities. As you stated earlier, you spend millions of dollars developing these projects. You don't spend millions of dollars developing widgets to sell to somebody and they can buy half or three quarters or 125. These are very specific type projects. And you don't apply a commodity type project to or provision to a project of that type.
The interconnection issue concerning overhead or underground transmission lines, did Shanghai submit any questions to clarify that particular issue prior to submitting its bid?
I don't know if we did, but there were several questions submitted with the same response each and every time. Strongly recommended.
If I could just have a few moments to go over my notes, thank you. I have a few further questions.
Let's just take a moment.
Okay.
Just half is fine.
Paula, I just realized you've been on the stand now for more than an hour and a half.
I'm happy to take a break for the witness and for everybody.
You want to take a break?
I'm good.
I don't have any further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there Mr. Camacho, do you have questions?
I just have a couple of questions.
How long do you think it'll take?
Less than 15 minutes.
Why don't we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Okay, we'll take a break.
I'll take a break.
How long do you want to take?
Just 15 minutes.
Okay. 15 minute break.
Okay. He's been on the stand a long time.
We're off the record at 11:16 a.m.
Hopefully you took a break too and stretched.
Not so much.
You were sitting there for almost an hour and a half.
That's okay. I'm still working off this jet lag.
Where do you live?
St. Louis.
Time is 11:29. We're back on the record for the formal hearing of OPAPA 17-008.
Mr. Camacho, do you have questions?
I just have a couple of questions. If I may provide the witness with our witness binder.
Yes.
Our exhibit binder. I just have a couple follow-up questions.
Okay.
You testified earlier with regard to the microgrid.
Yes.
And you testified that GPA did not provide a lot of specifics or detail to in the IFB so that the bidders could actually price as accurately as possible as they would like to. Is that correct?
I think what I indicated is that there were no specifications. No basis of design. There was guidance provided that spoke to the energy storage system.
Okay, and then you also mentioned that there's different components to the microgrid that have different cost components as well, correct?
Correct, I did.
So without the specifications,
right.
without the actual breakdown of what the components GPA was looking for,
It
is possible that each and every single bidder, including Shanghai, could have bid based upon what they thought GPA wanted, correct?
That's correct. On more on the smaller components, because they were fairly clear on the energy storage piece, but on the SCADA, the grid controller, everybody's going to kind of be in the same ballpark. But there is some room for variation, small variations in
the prices.
And
so it
would
be very difficult for you as an expert to sort of critique, so to speak, any other bidder's pricing, because you yourself indicated that Shanghai made assumptions and they presented their price, just like any other bidder would, correct?
Okay. Yeah, but, okay.
Thank
but,
you.
But KEPCO's and Shanghai's were pretty close, so we probably generally made the same assumptions, but Hanwha's was twice as high, so there was some big difference in assumptions there, if that's what we're going
right, on. But there could have been, there's that possibility.
Possible.
Okay. Now, the binder in front of you, I want to ask you to turn to tab F. Are you familiar with this document?
Let's see. Look at it. I haven't seen it before. I mean, I haven't seen it before. Let me read it. Yes, I am.
Okay, what is it?
So this is guidance on interconnection.
Are we on the same? What is the title on the top of the page?
This is F as in Frank.
Okay, the title of the document on the top of the page.
Amendment 8.
Okay, this is part amendment to the IFB, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I ask you to go down to number 2, and this is in reference to the overhead underground line, is that correct?
Yes.
The interconnection?
Correct.
And does it say here that GPA highly recommends or requires underground transmission lines to and from the substation?
No, they already said that in the IFB.
Okay, I ask you to read item D.
2D?
Yes.
GPA will entertain a 34.5 overhead interconnection from Dan Dan substation to the U-Matic substation.
So wouldn't that clarification in the amendment provide all bidders clarification that there will be overhead components?
Well, the way I read it is that they would...
It's yes or no?
They would... Well, it's not a yes or no.
No, my question is a yes or no.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay, I will repeat it. Would that indicate to all the bidders, including Shanghai, that... that GPA is expecting parts of this to be overhead transmission lines.
Not a yes or no.
Okay.
Okay, so what it says is that GPA will entertain. In other words, they would be willing to consider an overhead line specifically from Dandan substation, 34.5 kV line, from Dandan substation to U-Matic.
So the bid...
So it's the exception rather than the rule.
Okay, but it still states there that they will entertain overhead lines.
For that particular voltage, from that particular substation to the U-Matic substation.
And so in Shanghai's bid, isn't it true that you, for this particular substation, you still bid underground?
Yes.
No,
and part of the reason is item C for rights-of-way acquisitions are at the bidder's responsibility. We didn't want to put our bid at risk not having secured rights-of-ways for a potential overhead line.
Okay, but you did not seek further clarification from GPA on that.
They
you
had
just
already,
made the assumption. In
they had already provided clarification of it, that they strongly recommended underground. They did provide this clarification after our technical proposal went in.
Right.
Isn't it true that Hanwha submitted an underground interconnection scenario?
I'm not the witness here, sir. You are.
I can't ask you that question.
No.
Okay.
I have no further questions.
Thank you. We have a...
Yep. Brief. Redirect here. Let me ask this question. At project completion, when the vendor starts selling electricity to GPA,
correct.
At that point in time, who owns the transmission lines?
So normally the way it's done is that the developer causes the Gentai line to be constructed, and then after certification by GPA, they would then take on the responsibility for that newly constructed Gentai line.
They own it?
They would own it and maintain it.
So let's say we have completion, and 3 years after that, we have one of Guam's super typhoons, and the overhead transmission lines are damaged or destroyed completely. Who's going to pay for the repair?
I believe that would be a GPA responsibility at that point, because they've taken title to the transmission, to the Gentai line.
Okay, and if you had an underground line and a super typhoon, would you anticipate any damage at all?
No.
How about continuing maintenance of overhead lines after GPA acquires ownership? Is there continuing maintenance of overhead?
There is. There's tree trimming, which, some areas that's a lot bigger of an issue than others. Here it's kind of a big deal. So there's tree trimming, there's vandalism. Again, as you mentioned, storms or, typhoons, super typhoons, if they were to take down the pole lines or the conductors, you'd have those issues. But regular maintenance is required of overhead lines, correct?
And then who would have that responsibility after project completion?
That would be the GPA responsibility.
I just wanted to clarify, this hypothetical situation where GPA had announced in advance that it could procure up to 120 megawatt, but with a continuing limitation of 30 megawatt per facility. That's the hypothetical. And so based on that, and assuming that Shanghai Electric did want to bid, what would you have bid then?
Well, I think we would have taken a similar tack, which is to offer GPA some diversity of supply by having a minimum of two different locations, but we would also try to deliver the lowest possible price by having two 30 megawatt projects or a 60 megawatt project at a single location. So we would never entertain the full solicitation size at any given location, offer diversity of supply, but try and achieve the greatest economies of scale.
So the arrangement would be two 30 megawatt facilities at each of two locations.
depending on the proposal. I mean, if the IFB still limits it to 30, the answer is yes. If it doesn't limit it to 30 and limit it to 60 or no limit, I think that it would be prudent to even consider combining the 230s into a 60-megawatt project. But again, you got to be respectful of diversity of supply and balance that with cost efficiencies, economies of scale.
Mr. Camacho, just ask you about Exhibit F to Hanwha's exhibits, and specifically that language that says GPA will entertain a 34.5 kilovolt overhead interconnection from Dan Dan substation to Umatic station. And if it was your understanding, I mean, if you had understood that, well, you can have overhead anywhere. So why, if you can have, if it's clear that you can have overhead anywhere according to GPA, do you have any insight? Why would you be saying that?
I don't know, but they are singling out that as an overhead line they would entertain, as opposed to making a broad-based statement. I don't have that insight.
Did you review Hanwha's submission regarding overhead versus underground transmission lines? Their technical submission.
I did.
And what did it show?
It showed underground transmission lines going from Dan Dan back to Telefofo for site one and for site two.
And did
you said underground or overhead?
It, in their technical submission, they included underground transmission lines going from Dan Dan back to Telefofo for both their sites at Dan Dan.
Hanwha.
And did GPA then later accept above ground lines for Hanwha?
Based on the correspondence that we reviewed, yes, they did.
No further questions.
Mr. Botha, I have a question of you on his clarification. I'm not sure if this is correct for me to say this, but Mr. Artier said that who would maintain the overhead, the transmission lines? Would it be GPA's responsibility?
Be GPA, yeah. I think I asked him that before, and he agreed with me that it would be GPA's responsibility.
And that's your position?
It is.
Thank you.
So can Mr. Gauthier step down?
Well, I have a question.
Okay.
Based upon the redirect?
Yes. And if you could turn to, well, I think you have the additional binder in front of you,
yeah,
the one from Mr. Camacho. If you would look at Exhibit F, as he indicated, and then if you would look at paragraph 5, the last paragraph in there.
Yes.
Okay, what does that say?
The system impact study is the final determining authority for how proposed systems will interconnect to GPA's grid.
And so that would include whether it could be underground or overhead, a connection to the grid, would it not?
You could interpret it that way. It doesn't say that, but I suppose you could interpret
it. Okay, and what would, to your understanding, what would the purpose of a system impact study be? Say your proposal had been a winning proposal.
To determine the impact on the grid for interconnecting those megawatts at that location.
Okay, and then one clarification on exhibits 26 and 27. In the Shanghai binder, you would agree that the first one, Exhibit 26, discusses FERC, which would not apply to Guam here. Would you not agree?
Certainly not the QF aspect of it.
Okay.
Right.
And Exhibit 27, another definition from PURPA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, you would also agree that that would not apply to Guam as well?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any further questions of Mr. Gauthier?
No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gauthier. Okay.
In light of Mr. Botha's question, referring to a system impact study, are you familiar with system impact studies?
Correct.
Does a system impact study, does that get into the question of whether the transmission line should be overhead or underground?
To my knowledge, the system impact study should not speak to how a transmission line is routed, whether it, however physically it routes, or whether it's overhead or underground. System impact study looks at the impact of injecting those megawatts with those characteristics at that particular location in the GPA's grid.
Nothing further.
Okay, well, in light of that, you would agree that if you put down a specific point of interconnection, i.e. a substation, and there are problems with capacity on that substation, then you might have to reroute.
That would be the outcome of the system impact study.
Right, so it certainly could have an impact as to where you go or the physical routing of what you had proposed.
Physical routing in terms of endpoint, but not how you get there. Whether it's...
Well, if you go to a different substation, that would be a different endpoint, wouldn't it?
That's my point. It would be a different endpoint, but the system impact study doesn't care whether you go on this particular parcel or that particular parcel, and it doesn't care whether you go overhead or underground. It does care, and it dictates, from a cost perspective, maybe only...
Exactly.
Yes.
And it does say that it would be the final determining authority for how proposed systems will interconnect to GPA's grid.
Right.
So you have to get there one way or the other.
Correct. The change on the Hanwha proposal went from underground to overhead before the system impact study was completed. So it wasn't a result of the system impact study.
Okay, I don't believe I ever inferred that it was, but...
No, I'm just clarifying that
right.
Because there seems to be this reliance on the system impact study as to how the transmission line will be routed.
I don't have any further questions.
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything? Right. Who will be your next witness, Mr. Ben? Mr. Berman?
Our next witness will be Mr. Wu.
And how long do you anticipate this testimony will take?
Approximately 25 minutes. Without any interruptions or other questions.
Let me ask this. How many more witnesses do you think you can get through today from your list?
That'll be all. We only have two.
Okay, and then GPA will?
GPA is prepared to go through, so I would suggest that it would be also be appropriate that, if he's going to testify for a certain period of time, then that all of the attorneys, including myself, be allowed to cross-examine him at
right.
the same
right.
time.
Right.
I don't think you should get a break to consult with counsel before cross-examination, so
no.
I guess I would suggest...
It's like what happened with Mr. Gauthier.
We're just trying to figure out how to manage the witnesses who are waiting.
So I guess if we could take a lunch break now and come back,
right,
and then GPA is prepared to proceed forward with his witnesses after, if Mr. Wu was the only remaining
and
witness.
And who would be your first witness?
Well, that would be Mr. Dejun Jeong.
Is he downstairs? I don't know.
No, he's a party representative. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we do have several GPA employees downstairs. Are they going to be called today?
In the absence of an extensive cross-examination, which perhaps Mr. Gauthier is not a good thing of, we intend to call everybody today.
So then you'll want to have them still come?
Yes, I think they would just come back after lunch if that's an acceptable resolution.
Sure.
Okay.
And we'll, Mr. Wu, and then we'll proceed forward with our witnesses.
All right, so we'll resume at 1 o'clock.
We're off the record at 11:48 a.m.